You're listening to Irish Radio Canada's Home and Abroad, and I'm delighted to be sitting in the headquarters of Artemis in Belfast. And Artemis is an interesting company. It's involved in the marine industry, very much technology and what we would say, I guess, power, and power being what drives the boat. And John Patterson is here with me, and John has an interesting story. He's just had a walk through the factory, and so many things that are fascinating, the first one being that this company was only formed in 2017, and earlier in 2025 brought a vessel to Vancouver and Halifax in order to display the technology and the potential that would exist in Canadian environment. And that's one of the reasons we're here having a chat today. Thanks, John, for allowing me to come in and show me around.
Well, Austin, it's an absolute pleasure to meet you, and welcome back to Ireland. You have clearly haven't lost some of the accent that's stuck in there somewhere, which is really nice to see. Unfortunately, I did not get to go and experience the beautiful, you know, sort of British Columbia region when we had one of our e-foiler, sort of an EF-12 escape vessel, doing a tour both of the United States of America and Canada over the summer period. But it was really exciting for us to be able to get up to working in conjunction with FRS and, at that point, Green Line Ship. They're now called Circle. The name's changed on them, but we have partnered with them in order to take the vessel up through British Columbia in order to A, demonstrate the technology, B, highlight what modern technology in the maritime domain can do as far as the efficiency of vessels, so the overall cost saving to operators, but also doing that at zero emissions on the vessel. So again, how you transform what has traditionally been a very old and dirty industry, there are solutions now coming along which will also allow it to transform its carbon footprint without necessarily being hugely financial penalty to the operators.
In the marine industry, is there much of an appetite and an awareness to move in that direction? Because oftentimes there is resistance for what is established methodologies and technologies, a resistance to change. And particularly if it's a radical change, there's a fear. Do you find in talking to that sector, the marine sector, that there's an openness and a recognition that there's a need to move?
I think the maritime sector is a very interesting one. I know that this is radio, but I'm one of the older members of the company here. So when I describe myself as someone who has three and a half decades of the maritime industry, being old and grey bearded, the maritime industry is very like that. There's a lot of tradition, a lot of expectation, a lot of people wanting to change like-for-like because it's what they know. Mm-hmm. What we are finding, and you know, why it's so important for us to get the technology out and into operators' hands through things like the demonstration scheme that we ran up through both British Columbia and Halifax last year, is allowing operators to actually understand that this modern technology, you know, yes, it has a big wing underneath it, it rises above the water, etc. for it, but it's just a boat. You know, it's a boat which does what boats need to do for it. It just does it in a cleaner, more efficient fashion. For those people that aren't converts yet to electric cars because they still want to have their combustion engine, it's the sort of thing that until they actually go out and try it and get to demonstrate it themselves, physically use it, that you still have those barriers. So our challenge as a company is how we help break down some of those barriers and some of those long-term traditions of why we should just do it the same way as we've always done it.
So then in that context, would your when you'd go and do your demonstrations anywhere, but would your goal be ultimately that local businesses, be it Canadian shipbuildings, that they would say, well, this is something we should be integrating with ours and promoting to our customers, so you become part of a bigger solution?
I think it has to be for it. And certainly during our demonstration up in British Columbia, one of the biggest challenges that we had put to us, particularly in those sorts of regions, are things like deadhead logs. Mm-hmm. Now, internally, you know, yes, we are developing boats, but we're fully aware of some of the issues that come with it. So one of the other technologies that we're looking at trying to enhance is, I say collision avoidance, because every vessel has collision avoidance. The primary method of collision avoidance is the human being that is looking out the window. But with the advances of things like autonomy, you know, computer-aided systems are becoming much more prevalent into the maritime, you know, decision-making process to do that. And we did use a camera system which was developed by a Canadian company. It's, you know, state-of-the-art piece of equipment that we had integrated into our system, and actually we saw some really remarkable improvements in the ability for the operators to identify those big heavy deadhead logs that were floating, with the aspiration to be able to work with, you know, some of that Canadian technology to integrate it into our systems to improve the log, not just for our vessels but actually for the maritime enterprise in total.
One of the issues, of course, with a deadhead is it could actually be 6 inches, 12 inches just below the surface. That can be a real challenge. When you say the human eye, or in this case an electronic eye, has the ability, or do you have anything that will help you get that 6, 12 inches below, or that may get you below the flare?
An element of that camera system, it wasn't a traditional camera system, it was the way and the frequencies it was operating on allowed, because one of the biggest issues on things like infrared is that deadheads are so soaked, you know, they're effectively the same temperature. So where, you know, the traditional way of looking at it, and we even see it into the automotive industry, one of the bits which they're introducing into their systems is that infrared piece, so you get that heads-up display at night, shows you where the people are and where the hazards, etc. are. So it was, again, it was a clever iteration of the frequency bands to allow us to be able to detect those. The biggest challenge in the maritime, and I've said this on numerous occasions, you're never going to be able to eradicate all accidents. Mm-hmm. You know, accidents will happen. If you hit them in one of our boats, or if you hit them in a standard traditional boat, there will be a degree of damage. Mm-hmm. What we have actually done in our engineering processes, etc., is look at that, you know, sort of break chain off it, or damage chain, so that actually if you do hit something, particularly if you're foiling, the impact and the damage will happen to the foil rather than the hull of the vessel. Mm-hmm. So the foil itself will naturally break away. Mm-hmm. And what you then have is you still maintain the structural integrity of the vessel. So yes, it's been a very bad day from a maritime operator's perspective, but you're still floating. Mm-hmm. Hidden on a conventional vessel, you might still be floating, but you're pouring maritime concrete into that big hole to mm-hmm. stop the water coming in. Mm-hmm. And having spent 3 decades in the Royal Navy, and on a sort of biannual basis having to go and do that, you know, sort of underwater training piece, it's not pleasant. When you get water coming into a ship, it's scary, it's horrible, and it's not the place you want to be.
The capacity of any battery is always a concern, even on the road, to transition from internal combustion to electric. And the question is always raised, are there adequate charging stations? And I know I was talking to somebody recently, and they said that they changed cars because they couldn't get from Ottawa to a place outside Pembroke, and there were no charging stations in Pembroke. You know, you go out onto the water, there's no charging stations. So your range would come into question.
It's a very good question, Austin, and it's one of the biggest challenges that we have. Electric is not the solution for every use case. You know, so deep sea fishermen will struggle to get enough electric energy stored because they don't do a known duty cycle or a known route. They have to go and chase the fish wherever the fish are, and they are very indeterminable little creatures to find when you're on the big wide ocean. So where our technology comes in, you know, sort of in its sort of main strength, are around certain use cases. So moving people, so ferries, because they're very known routes. They run to a timetable. They've got known distances, known stopping points, known points to charge. And some of the other harbour vessels, so some of the workboats that will work in and around harbours and pilot boats. So there's two elements to the pilot boat piece. A, there's the efficiency of it because it's a known duty cycle. The foils themselves effectively provide a massive big stabilizing fin underneath the vessel, which creates increased safety when you're at that most dangerous point, when you've done your deliberate collision, parked the pilot launch alongside a big commercial vessel, and you're physically moving that human being from small boat to big boat or the other way around, you increase that level of stability. You did say you started that sort of question off with battery technology being limited. It is at the point of purchase of the vessel. Unlike the automotive sector, you know, you generally find, and I converted 18 months ago to an electric car, the dealership, as you would expect every good dealership to do, it went in for its service and they lent me the latest, newest model, which came out with an extra 70 miles range on it. I was cursing at them, should I say, because I'd have loved the new one, and the Lord High Admiral at home went, no, you can't change it. The bit with battery technology in boats is the hull will last much longer than the life of the battery. So any use cycle, your batteries will degrade over a period of time. We factor that into the conversation about through life costs of the vessel. So depending on how you use it, how frequently you need to rapid charge it or slow charge it, because it will make a significant difference in the overall length of the battery. A typical ferry operator may be looking to change their batteries after 4 to 5 years. In 4 to 5 years' time, we're very, very unlikely to be replacing those with like-for-like batteries. And as we discussed when we walked around the factory at Austin, and you saw sort of the three or four iterations of battery technology that we as a reasonably embryonic company have already been through, the battery technology that you get on your boat today that will give you 60 nautical mile range, in 4 or 5 years' time when you want to change it, what we will end up installing will either be batteries of the same weight but with significant more energy density, which will get you more range, or lighter batteries with the same energy density, which will ironically get you more range because the vessel's lighter. So the question really is, in 5 years' time, do you need to buy bigger, heavier, expensive batteries, or can you go for smaller, lighter batteries to keep the same range on your duty cycle? So if the ferry has been working perfectly well from A to B across the lake for 5 years, you take the cheaper, smaller, lighter option and continue your journey and your route cycle as you've always been doing.
You mentioned workboats. So the ferry is very much same distance and same route. But the workboats, my recollection is, you know, you get a tug that's pulling in a cargo vessel into harbour. The power output that was coming from the traditional diesel engine, you're able now to match that from the electric.
Match?
By that I mean that it can functionally perform the same duties.
Yeah, I was about to challenge the match or surpass piece. You know, we were talking as we sort of walked around the factory, and a lot mentioned brands, etc. But you look at, you know, any good car magazine or, you know, car program on the radio or on TV, they'll always highlight the difference between a current electric car and how it performs against a standard combustion engine vehicle.
Right.
And it is, I would say it's electric, the difference in the two, but it can be quite frightening. You know, as we walked around the factory, we went from, you know, talking about a smaller sort of engine on our 12-metre vessels up to one of the two bigger, you know, sort of 650-kilowatt dual or counter-rotating prop engines we use on our 24-metre ferry, but equivalent of up to about 1,000 brake horsepower in old money, in something which is no more than about 70 centimetres wide and about 170 centimetres long.
A few years ago, I remember there was an issue, I think it was in Dunleary, because the ferry was coming in at a speed that it was creating a wake that was causing a problem. And I would take it that this technology, if what you're doing is you're able to get the vessel a bit out of the water, increase speeds, does the wake, is there a difference in what traditional technology and current ferries would have in that type of situation?
The wake is one of our signature features. For those of you that want to go out and Google Artemis Technologies, both on our website and also, you know, readily findable on, you know, channels like YouTube on the internet, we've got lots of demonstration sort of pieces out there. The vessels themselves need a certain amount of speed to actually come up and go foiling, but because of the power, the instantaneous torque you get from the electric motor, you can achieve that in a very short period of time. So, for example, at Belfast Harbour, the speed limit around the harbour, as you would expect, and you know, it's the same in every major waterway, inland waterway and harbour, there will be a speed limit, 6 knots in Belfast Harbour, unless you're in one of the Artemis foiling vessels, where we effectively aren't limited to speed. We still need to check in with the sort of vessel control system make sure that there aren't other big movements happening around the harbour that, you know, we may interfere or distract, etc., when we're doing it. But we can quite happily go out through the harbour with virtually no wake doing 25 to 30 knots. Now, in most environments, if you were to do that, you know, you'd have the local community would all be complaining. And it's not about... It's not necessarily about, well, it is, there's an element of protecting other boats and other water users for it, but also the environmental conditions, etc., because in lots of ecologically sort of sensitive areas, that wake can create quite a lot of damage along banks and waterways, and how that therefore affects the broader ecology of that region. So there are broader aspects. You know, yes, the vessels are efficient. You know, you can have up to 90% saving on the amount of fuel and energy you're using, but the broader environmental benefits when operating in particularly environmentally sensitive areas should not be underestimated as well. And certainly, you know, given some of the beautiful Canadian, you know, sort of lakes and waterways, etc., it is real potential in order to allow people to move much more efficiently and faster without a lot of that traditional damage that we would associate with high-speed boat movements.
And that would then be particularly applicable in what are inland waterways?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you any competition? Like, you've had this leading-edge technology, and insofar as it's the marine industry is very much a global industry, I take it, if you're knocking on the Canadian doors, you're pretty much leaders in the field.
It's very interesting question about what is our competition. Yes, there are other companies out there who are looking at developing foiling technology, etc., for it. So we have, in a pure foiling perspective, yes, there are other competitors out there. Are they competitors, or are actually they helping in the advocacy for the efficiencies that this technology can now bring into the maritime? You could argue that they're actually helping in that advocacy and that voice, and helping change the opinion of the grey-bearded old traditionalists in the sector who just want to go out and buy a like-for-like replacement vessel. You know, I would say, you know, some of our, you know, biggest competitors are actually the traditionalists who will be very good at trying to advocate for just replacing like for like. You know, why would you want to buy an electric car? It's got limited range, it's got whatever with it, it's got X amount of issues. It's about educating people that actually the technology now enables you to be able to do your job in a more efficient, cleaner, and more cost-effective way than people would have been able to do in the past.
is there a size limit? And by that I mean under a certain length of vessel, is it impractical?
To go foiling?
Yeah, well, and to, yeah, to put in...
To go foiling size down, no, not really, because you've got everything from foiling sort of surfboards now. So yes. Size down, no. Size up, there will be a limit, because it's all to do with the size of the wing that you can fly onto the vessel for it. So again, you need to be able to balance the overall size of the wing. If you were to go big enough, then yes, you could, but you'd probably then never get it into a harbour because it would protrude out so far. So it's a careful balance where we're really conscious of weights of vessels, which is why we use carbon fibre in a lot of our manufacturing for it, just because the structural strength of modern composite systems, strength to weight ratio is much better, much more efficient than the older, more traditional steel and even aluminium.
So then is there a draft issue?
There's, depends on where you want to berth it. Yeah. You know, there's
not on the sandbank.
Not on the sandbank. There is always a draft issue when the operator puts it in the wrong place. Yes. What it does do is create a slight, I say, a dilemma for ports. You know, that what they need to be able to do is come up with parking it in a slightly different place if it is an issue for it. Now, depending on the size you're going for, and a lot of the areas that we're operating in, we don't necessarily consider it to be a significant issue for it. But, you know, yes, if you're going to turn around and go, we've only got 1 meter, you know, and the vessel's hull is 0.8 of a meter, then yes, you're going to have a draft issue.
So from a Canadian business perspective, what would you be hoping to achieve?
I think from a Canadian business perspective, we're actively looking. There are a number of tender opportunities we're expecting to come out shortly for it. So there's a bit really of how we get into that tender process and build sufficient interest and sufficient pipeline in Canada. I think from our sort of equation bits, the magic number for whether we would look to integrate vessels in a country opposed to just manufacturing elsewhere and delivering is 5. So, you know, an order pipeline of more than 5 in Canada, particularly if it's something which we, you know, think has got the legs to grow and be slightly larger than that, then we'd seriously look at how we do the integration work in sort of Canada and where we would do it in Canada. A lot of the clever technology will stay rooted here in Belfast, so sort of the foil production piece, which, you know, you've actually been round and sort of seen the size and the shape of the foils that are being designed. A lot of the other elements, you know, so the whole manufacture and a lot of the component parts, you know, so seats, wiring, looms, you know, a lot of those other elements, you know, we can take from and source locally in that piece. So again, if the Canadian market is big enough, then we would look at how we shift that integration to encapsulate more of the Canadian supply chain into our build process to maximise the opportunities back into the Canadian economy.
Unlike terrestrial vehicles, is retrofit on existing vehicles something that's possible? The reason I ask that is because, again, you know, I had a sailboat, and my sailboat was a 1972, and it's still out there on the water because of the fiberglass hull. So people don't necessarily rotate or change out their fleets as often as someone would do for a car. So the ability to retrofit is something.
Retrofit is an interesting question, Austin. If you have bottomless pockets, then yes, we can retrofit it for you.
But you're a sailor, you don't.
You've already emptied them in the Chandlery many, many times over. I know. But, you know, so yes, you could, but you're almost at a point that retrofitting an old legacy vessel takes you almost to the price point of buying a new vessel.
Right.
So are you better to look at how you repurpose that vessel? You know, if it still has legs and use to it, there will be some other person in the, you know, maritime industry who can perhaps repurpose it and use it, but you might be better to think about upgrading your fleet at that point in time.
When you talk in terms of fleet as well, do you find in going around doing demonstrations and showing the technology that culturally there are different attitudes around the world to technology? So that be it that there are some countries that are very anxious to embrace new technology. And it goes back to what we're talking about with change. But getting beyond the actual sale, the ship owner, the boat owner, where the country itself, as a cultural issue, is stagnant or progressive.
Every country is subtly different. I think almost globally nowadays, there are very few places in the world that you show up that somebody will not have a smart telephone in their pocket. So I think fewer places, particularly in and around larger port infrastructure areas, city areas, the delta between embracing technology has subtly shifted. I think the bigger challenge in the maritime domain, and it's the bit where, you know, we have that challenge to overcome, is in the repair and the sort of looking after vessels, where people over years have become skilled at looking after older diesel engines. It's become much more familiar with them. A lot of the technology and a lot of the sort of engineering support that is required around these vessels is significantly less than you would have expected on a much more traditional vessel. You know, those of you that haven't had, you know, the privilege of owning an electric vehicle, you know, the service on an electric vehicle is significantly less burdensome and cumbersome than it is on a more traditional vessel, because you don't have the same level of oil changes and routine sort of inspections and bits and pieces that you have to do. So it's trying to shift their mindset and their culture away. But you're absolutely right, there are some countries and societies that are much more open towards it. Certainly, you know, some of the northern European countries, a lot of North America, the Canadian culture in particular, in that sort of cleaner, environmentally friendly piece, are more willing to embrace technology to drive those sort of decarbonisation type agendas. Other parts of the world, it's solely driven by the bottom line. It's what the dollar will get you. So that operational savings that these vessels will give to a commercial operator is the bit which gets the sort of chief finance officer in a company excited, rather than necessarily the engineering officer who sort of looks at them and goes, I don't know anything about the technology. And of course, we will help and educate and train them in what they need to do to look after these beautiful craft.
I'm going to be a little bit biased here, because I know when we walk in somewhere and we open our mouth and talk, they say, I love your accent, and could you talk more? Could you recite the telephone book? how do you find coming from Belfast and the background of the tradition of shipbuilding in the north of Ireland, that globally that there is an awareness, and that how receptive when you walk in, that charm that exudes from Ireland is received?
I think the Irish accent and the Irish background is always very good for opening doors. You know, I spent a career sailing around the world on ships, and every port I went into, you weren't very far away from an Irish pub. It didn't matter whether you were in the Far East, you were in South America, North America, and certainly you get into Canada, etc. There is a huge tradition where we Irish have gotten everywhere and have infiltrated everywhere with it. So yes, it can be beneficial. There's also a lot of places around the world that have, you know, not very many places around the world that haven't heard of the Titanic. So it's probably the most famous ship there is out there, and as the old Irish saying goes, you know, when it left Belfast it was fine, and then we handed it to an Englishman and then you saw what happened. So I think probably enough said on the Titanic.
John, I want to say thank you first of all. It's been fascinating, and I really appreciate you taking the time. A learning experience in every respect, and I hope that we see your name cropping up regularly on various nautical and marine news clips in North America and in Canada, and hope you have fantastic success.
Awesome, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. It's been a pleasure to have you back on the island of Ireland and in Belfast. And for any of your listeners in the shipping industry, if you happen to find yourself in Ireland, please do look us up, come and have a chat. And for those of you that are in the market for a new boat, we're always available to have a conversation.
And the website that you go to find you?
It's artemistechnologies.co.uk.
Thank you.
Thank you.